Welcome to Magic's Big Adventure, Volume 6, a BelowTopSecret.com member podcast feature. This is Magic. If you've been following along, in this episode, I want to talk about past lives. And, past lives, I think are past lives. As I go through this, I'm going to try and minimize all the disclaimers. I'm hoping that if you've been following along, you've got the idea that I'm not necessarily saying that this is true. I'm just saying this is what I experience and draw your own conclusions from that. And certainly in the case of past lives, I think in particular, this is an example of where the line between imagination and memory is particularly difficult to establish. In particular, the case, memories are, one of the things about memories is that they can change. What people remember happening can change over time. Even, in short periods of time, one of the problems with testimony in courts is that witnesses who were there, who see things happen, they can report completely different things, even though they were standing right next to each other and both looking at the same thing. And so there's a natural error built into memories that makes this the process of determining if something is past life or just a flight of fancy makes that a lot harder. And so what's it like, when I'm trying to remember past lives? And the best example, I think, is that it's a lot like trying to remember things that happened in this life. You might ask yourself, so what was I doing, 20 years ago? And, okay, well, where was I? And what was I doing? What job did I have? Who did I know? And there's like a series of questions that I'll go through and sort of ask myself about these past lives. It's very much like just trying to remember what I did in this life. And what's interesting is the results that come back are kind of similar. It's, there's a degree of uncertainty. I mean, it's hard to remember what happened, say, a year ago or 2 years ago in many cases. So, just how much harder would it be to remember something that happened, say, 5 or 6 thousand years ago? And I don't know how long ago it was, but I think the first human, and that's a whole other deal, human versus non-human, I think the first human past life I remember is this woodcarver guy, who the name that comes to my mind was his name, given name was Eggman. Like, I keep thinking, well, I am the Eggman, I am the walrus, that kind of thing. But I think that's what his name was. Although my wife at the time, whose name was Amy, I think, who was actually Vanessa, by the way, that was one of the lives that we shared together, and it was her. I think that's why it was such a pleasant life. She used to call me Amon or something like that. It was Amon. It meant something like reliable, like kind of dependable or maybe predictable. But she seemed to think that, and really that's what's kind of interesting is my personality. If that in that life, the woodcarver, I love remembering back to that village. The village's name was Tish, I believe it was Tish. And the land was named Katur, I think, is what we called it, which I think was something, could have been Ur, like Southern Ur or Southeast Ur, something. Katur, Kat meant something, like a direction, I think. So I think that was like back in the ancient Mesopotamia days or whatever, but I'm not sure. But we lived in a village that was probably about a good mile from a really wide river. The river didn't move very fast. It was really big. And there's a lot of mud on the banks, and actually the houses that we lived in were made out of clay bricks that were dried in the sun on the banks of the river. And there were families that lived down by the river that was their thing they did. They made these clay bricks. And we would use those bricks, most of us, they would use those bricks to build our houses in this village. The primary source of income, I guess you could call it, for the village was agriculture, growing grains. And, there were fields all around the village. There were fields, and the farmers would be out there, and they had these, I guess, oxes, and they'd ride along on the plows behind them, and it was like a classic pastoral agrarian scene. And my job was a woodcarver. That was my thing that I did, and was married, had kids. One of the things that just still stands out so much when I think back on those times, this village, one of the things about the village is there were kids everywhere, all the time. There were always kids. There were always kids everywhere, and they were always into everything. But what was interesting about the kids was that they really were quite helpful. Granted, there was just, they were kids, you know, and kids like to mess around and all that. But, you know, I'd be carving wood, and kids, even, you know, the girls would come up, they want to help carve. You know, if you had to do things like repair the roof, the roofs we had had these wooden frames of sort, and then over those frames we would put these layers of woven mats on them. It wasn't like roof thatching. We actually had layers of mats, and there was, and that was actually one of the things that kids did, was weaving mats, and there were families in the village that specialized in weaving these mats. You could buy them for really cheap. So we'd use them for the roofs, and you could use them inside the house, and the nice thing about them is, you know, they were made out of grain stalks, and after a while they'd wear out, but they were cheap, you know. You could get them, you'd like trade, you know, bread for them and stuff like that. I think there were coins, but not a lot of what was trade. You know, I think it was mainly for like when people came in and bought grain, and there was during the harvest season we'd have these festivals, and these grain buyers would come in, and it was a big party, and they'd buy, and money would flow into the village, and you know, people would come through, and it was pretty cool. But that was one of the things that really stands out, is just that the kids were always there. The kids were everywhere, and it, you know, like Hillary Rodham Clinton, you know, and It Takes a Village. It was like that, you know. You knew who your kids were, but the kids just were kind of like community kids. You know, they were just everywhere. And there's all these details I remember them, including some of the people that were there, and you know, just like there was this guy who was a healer, and he also brewed this, brewed like some kind of alcoholic beverage that he was rather fond of. And I think the guy was a drunk. And you know, there's just all these things that kind of stand out from that life. But the thing I most love about that life is just how calm, when I think back to how that was, it was just so relaxing. And it was a good long life, and it was a very peaceful life, and I remember it fondly. What's interesting is that I think the next, if we look at it in terms of sequence, the next life after that was this I guess, a Greek warrior, Lucas of Andromeda, I think was the guy's name. But, you know, when I think back, I don't really know the languages of these people spoke. It's, you know, I remember how I felt, and I think some words come through, but it's like, you know, if I was Greek, can I speak Greek now? You know, so, and Lucas was a soldier. One of the things about Lucas's life, which I find interesting, all my past lives, interesting enough, are all male. And I know that there are people who are males in this life who have past life experiences of being females, and that's fairly common. A lot of spirits seem to change gender, but in my past lives, it's all male, and I don't think it's because I'm a macho man. I'm not really sure why it is. And in the case of Vanessa, it seems like she's female. She seems to be, that seems to be the kind of lives that she has. She's a very feminine spirit. So I'm not sure what that means exactly, but I'm kind of glad that she's feminine and I'm masculine. We really get along quite well. One of the things that's interesting about Lucas's life is he didn't think of it this way, but you know, he was a soldier, and there was this whole thing with the training, and a soldier's life back in those days, you had to be tough. You had to be tough. And I remember I was a kid, and the way you got into the armies, you'd hang around, you were a kid, you were a boy, you know, and you'd help them carry stuff, and you were just basically looking to try and get a chance to get accepted as a soldier when you got big enough. And the ones that got accepted as soldiers were the toughest kids. So, you know, the kids, there was these crowds of kids that would follow the armies around, you know, and hang around them when they were in camp and stuff. And one of the things, you know, this whole thing, I mean, it's all in the threads and these details, you know, that I didn't start off at the top, that's for sure. I kind of worked my way up, and it took a long time. And, you know, my memories of the fighting are so different from, like, if you watch the movies like Spartacus and stuff. And, yeah, you'd have these large groups of people running at each other. But what it really boiled down to in the combat in those days was it wasn't, you know, there were situations where there were, like, these lines of soldiers and foot soldiers, and they have the swords and the shields, and they were the big beefy guys. But what our guys were sort of like reserves, and we tended to stay behind the lines. And we were spearmen, and the way we fought, it always turned out the same. It would be like groups of us and groups of them, and you would try and get more of you in one place than they were. It was basically groups of guys running around looking for stragglers, anyone who got cut off from their group, and ganging up on them. And, you know, it took a lot to kill someone that way. It was really a pretty brutal way to fight. I mean, it's, you know, it's not like you just, you know, like modern, you shoot a guy and he dies. You know, back then you'd like stab, and you'd have to stab a bunch of times, and it was not pleasant. You know, people don't give up willingly on the battlefield, and so it was pretty brutal stuff and bloody and it just sweaty and hot. And I have all kinds of weird memories from that. And, not things I would have expected. One of the things about that life that really stood out, and Lucas didn't think anything of it, is the question of homosexual activity. And without dwelling on that too much, let's just say that I know modern Greeks take umbrage to the idea that there was homosexual behavior in the armies and stuff like that. Well, whatever army I was in, it was very gay, but they didn't think of it as gay. It was the soldier's way. Women were thought of as a source of disease, and you didn't want to have anything to do with them. I mean, some guys did, but then the other guys wouldn't sleep with them. But it was like every night, you know what I mean? And everybody was involved. And that was not something I would have expected in terms of remembering life as a soldier. It's like, okay, but that's a thing. My company of guys, the company that fights together, they slept together. And a good time was had by all. So moving right along. That was interesting because that was that life I got captured and was a slave for a couple of years. The guy that captured me, he's like this chief. He ended up having to kill me because I got one of his wives pregnant, and it cut my head off. And I remember that, and I remember what it felt like. It really felt weird, and my head was conscious for a while after it got cut off. It's pretty bizarre. But anyway, let's move along because that was kind of a gross life. The next one after that was my Yoshi life, and I was a rabbi, and this was at the time of the Roman occupation, so it's like biblical times, like, maybe Jesus was running around or something, but I don't remember him. I don't remember anybody matching quite that description back in those days. But that was another one where Vanessa was with me, and her name was Miriam in that life, but I called her Muriel because my mom's name was Miriam. And there were a lot of Miriams, by the way, running around back then, and a lot of Yusefs, the Yusefs and Miriams, they were everywhere. That life was fascinating. I mean, I remember studying, and I think that I was what they call an Essene, although I called them like Yazid. I married young. I was a teenager when I got married, and my wife was well off. She had a lot of money, and she was beautiful, of course, because this was Vanessa. And what's interesting about Vanessa in the physical form, she always looked a little different, but her hair would be a little different color, and her face and everything's always different, but it was always her. I could tell, and she was drop dead gorgeous in that life. She was actually quite beautiful in the woodcarver life too, but in the rabbi life, I called her Muriel. She was just the kind of woman that when she walked down the street, traffic stopped. People would just stare at her because she was just that gorgeous, and she was my wife. That was pretty cool. But I was involved with the Zahal, which is called the Zealots, the resistant movement, and that was very interesting. There's a whole thing that goes with that, and I'll just kind of skip along. I could go on for hours just talking about one of these lives. It's just amazing, all the details. A next one that's emerging, and I still haven't quite fleshed out, but I think I was a villager in Japan a long time ago. I think it was Japan. And it was like before the samurais and all that kind of stuff and the shoguns and all that. It was a long time ago. And what is interesting about life is apparently the village I lived in was inside this very kind of deep ravine, and it was very hard to get in and out from the rest of the land in there. So we didn't get a lot of people coming in by land. I mean, the trails to go in and out were zigzag type trails going up very, very steep, almost cliff-like walls. But we were on the ocean. And I remember I did some farming. It's not very large farm plots, but I would do some farming, and I also fished. And in boats, the boats weren't that big, but we would go out far enough and we could get some fish. And I remember I don't remember my name, and I don't remember a lot of things from that life, but I just remember really enjoying that life as well. It was a lot like the woodcarver life, except a little different. And I don't remember Vanessa being with me in that life, which is like, it feels like a void. Maybe I just don't remember or something at this point. But so I think that I might have been in Japan, and I'm thinking maybe about 1,000 years ago or something like that. I don't really know. And I could be wrong, but I feel a very strong connection to Japan. Actually, when I flew into Japan, I've never really been in Japan for a lot, but I like you know, passed through Narita Airport and all that. My first time flying into Japan, I was almost unable to stay in my seat. I was so excited. It just blew my mind that I was going to go to Japan. I love Japan. I am a total Japanomaniac. So that's another possible life. And then there's the controversial Rousseau question. Was I Jean-Jacques Rousseau in the last life? And the thing that makes this controversial is that, you know, Paul Richard, Brother Avatar, you know, said, oh, the Society of Light says that you were, you know, Rousseau in your last life. And I'm like, okay, well, if I was, or, you know, was I or wasn't I? And if I was, am I being, you know, is this a suggestion? Is this the power of suggestion? Well, I think I was Rousseau because this guy told me, or, you know, so this is whole issue I got to deal with that. But as I think back on that life, I have all these memories that seem to correlate reasonably well with Rousseau's life. One of the most, the strongest memories I remember is walking in this street, what I think was like an alpine kind of village in the wintertime. And there was it was slushy, there was slush and ice in the streets. It was really cold. And I remember that my shoes were soaking wet and they leaked, and I was miserable, and it was cold as hell. And there was all this horse manure in the streets, you know, from the horses. And it was just like this, I remember just feeling absolutely destitute, like there was just no place for me to go. And that's like the strongest memory I have from Rousseau's life. And, but there's other memories I have, like, you know, having to write letters, you know, the different patrons I had. There was this one guy who was really rich, and I stayed with him for a while, and he had me, you know, do things like teach his kids. He had like a son and a daughter, and I had to teach them, and I hated it. I hated teaching the kids. It just, it felt so demeaning. And he'd have me write his letters for him, you know, so he could have his letters written by Rousseau. And he took good care of me, but I remember feeling a lot of resentment about that. And I remember there was another patron who was like a lady, and that got interesting. That was a little bit more than just a business relationship, as I recall. But I remember just having a feeling of just tremendous resentment about the fact that I had to depend on these people who, on the one hand, I admired because they had a lot of money, and on the other hand, I looked down on because I thought they were just a bunch of idiots, frankly. I mean, they had these bizarre eccentricities. One of these things about Rousseau memory is that I would actually like think of Rousseau and me talking in my mind. And at first, we just didn't get along. He was, in my opinion, a jerk. You know, basically a jerk. But even early on, he had this word that he wanted me to know. It was, and he kept saying it over and over in my mind. It was Etevan, Etevan. He kept saying it, repeating like that's important. And I don't know what Etevan means, but I'm thinking if it was a place in France, then maybe that's where something related to him, like some papers or something like that, could be found. So one of those little, well, maybe when I get around to it, things is to see if I can find out what the deal is with Etevan, and if there's some connection to Rousseau with that. And one of the things about Rousseau also is I remember a lot of the way he thought about things. The way, for example, I think a lot of his writings on society and stuff were really based upon his own experiences with the aristocracy, and he had a lot of resentment about the aristocracy. So he was, you know, is often quoted as being a revolutionary writer. And I think a lot of the writing that he did, and by the way, I haven't really studied Rousseau. I mean, you know, he's one of those guys I think everyone wants to say they have read, but don't. And that's certainly the case with me. But anyway, so there's kind of a quick overview of those lives. And of course, make of that what you will. I'm still trying to make some sense of it. If nothing else, it's interesting to have these, you know, to get into the mode where I'm remembering these lives. And it's a lot of fun. But as like Vanessa will say, and like Brother Avatar will say, it's not for us to just dwell in the past. I think it's interesting to think about the past lives, but, you know, I'm me now, and this is my life. And even though Rousseau seemed to feel like it was his job to take over and run my life, no, this is me, and I like to think that maybe I'm kind of an improvement. Although it seems, looking back on those past lives, that there are themes that keep recurring over and over, especially with regards to family and relationships and some of the things that some of my personal issues. And it's interesting. I finally looked at a biography of Rousseau, and it was very interesting to compare his life with this current life and some of the parallels, and I won't get into detail on those. Anyway, this is Volume 6 of Magic's Big Adventure, an epic rambling, if you will, and a discussion of past lives. And in the next volume, I'm not quite sure what I'll cover, but, you know, kind of trying to get through and cover all the interesting bases here. Anyway, I hope you're still enjoying it if you're still with me, and for the time being, this is Magic, signing out.